Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Podcast lovers, rejoice. Meet Pocket Cast, your new favorite podcast app for listening, search, and discovery. Our beautifully designed app gives you more control, makes it easier to find and organize podcasts, and offers powerful tools to customize listening. To hear all your favorite shows, download our free app at pocketcast.com or find us in the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Andrew Peach, and in the early hours of Friday, the 20th of March, these are our main stories. The number of people killed by the coronavirus in Italy has reached more than 3,400, exceeding the total who've died in China, where the outbreak began. President Trump says a drug that's been used for decades to treat malaria has now been approved as a treatment for COVID-19.
Clinical trials are already underway for many new therapies, and we're working on scaling these to allow many more Americans to access different drugs that have shown really good promise. We've had some really good promise.
And Congress in Chile has agreed to postpone a referendum on a new constitution so the country can deal with the pandemic. Italy has overtaken China as the country where most people have died as a result of COVID-19. More than 3,400 people have lost their lives there. And unlike China, where the situation has now stabilised, in Italy, things are getting worse. Dramatic pictures on social media show military trucks carrying the coffins of victims in the northern province of Bergamo to other regions to be cremated. Italy's hospitals are struggling to cope, with many running out of beds and doctors and nurses succumbing to the virus themselves. This has prompted some of the most famous footballers in the world, with all games currently suspended, to try and help out. People like the AC Milan striker Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who set up an online fundraiser to help hospitals in Italy.
I count on the generosity of my colleagues, of all professional athletes, and of those who want to make a small or large donation according to their possibilities. Together we can really help hospitals and doctors and nurses who selflessly work every day to save our lives. Today, we are the ones cheering for them. Let's together kick the coronavirus away and win this match. And remember, if the virus don't go to Zlatan, Zlatan goes to the virus.
Meanwhile, the nationwide lockdown in Italy to prevent the spread of coronavirus will be extended. It was to run until the 3rd of April. Now there is no end date. Italy's 60 million people can only leave their homes if they're key workers or need to get food or medicine. I've been speaking to the Italian journalist Silvia Borelli, who's in Rome, about the mood in the country.
Completely surreal, I would say. It's very hard to just know every morning when you wake up that you can't leave your home and you're going to have to figure out some way to entertain your children, in my case, a toddler. And at the same time, you're working remotely and you're going to have to get in a queue to buy groceries at the supermarket. Also, we don't know when it will end, and the news bulletins are clearly very concerning. And day after day, everyone is just sitting in front of the television every single evening, listening to this death toll that continues to rise and these infections that continue to climb. And we all wonder when it will be over.
My sense from everyone I've spoken to in Italy in the past couple of weeks is that people feel regretful that on a personal level and as a country, this wasn't taken more seriously sooner. Does that mean now we're getting the government announcing an extension to the lockdown, that everyone's supportive of that?
Miscommunication was a big part of the problem in the beginning, with many people underestimating the problem and just carrying on their life as normal, and so increasing the number of contagions and infections around the country. I think if the lockdown is going to have to be extended, people will be supportive of it, because as I was saying, people are very concerned and these numbers keep climbing. Today, Italy surpassed China in the number of deaths from coronavirus and COVID.
And about a week ago, we were getting absolutely horrific accounts of scenes inside Italian hospitals. Is there any sense that the health service, the very good health service that Italy has begun to be able to cope with what's confronting it?
It's actually getting worse in Lombardy. There are hospitals on the brink, especially in the province of Bergamo, where the outbreak is now focused. But that is simply because they have too many cases to manage. Italy has 5,500 beds in intensive care units nationwide. Now we have across the country 2,300 people requiring intensive care. And the bulk of those people are concentrated in Lombardy and in the province of Bergamo.
Now, just finally, Sylvia, I'm going to ask you to do something it's really hard for journalists like you and I to do, which is to step back from reporting what's happening in a factual sense and try and tell me the impact that living through this is having on you.
Personally, I think it's allowing me to focus on important things. And I've launched my own fundraiser for a small rural hospital in central Italy because I thought it was the only useful thing I could do at this point. And I think, you know, smaller towns and smaller places are the ones that shouldn't be left behind in the situation. And I'm really focusing on this fundraiser and trying to feel useful.
The Italian journalist Sylvia Borelli with me from Rome. Now, almost a month ago, our Vienna correspondent Bethany Bell was sent to northern Italy to report on the coronavirus outbreak there. Now, strict restrictions on movement have been imposed not only across Italy, but in other European countries too, including Austria, to where she's just returned with some great difficulty. Bethany, who's now in home quarantine in line with Austrian law, sent us this report.
This is a little town called Guardamiglio, and here the bars, the cafes and other businesses are all shuttered up, and they have official signs on them saying they've been closed. Because in February, it seems strange to be in an Italian town where the coffee bars were closed. This was one of my first reports from just outside the red zone in Lombardy, the epicentre of the coronavirus outbreak. Back then, Italy had reported around 100 cases of the infection and two people had died. Austria had yet to see a single case.
The Foreign Office has warned against all but essential travel to Italy as the country imposes a nationwide lockdown to try to curb the spread of the coronavirus.
As the crisis escalated, so did restrictions on movement, not just in Italy, but across Europe. With cases of coronavirus increasing in Austria, Vienna cancelled all direct flights from Italy. Vienna Airport says it expects scheduled flights to stop completely in the coming days. But cameraman Fabian Chaundi and I did manage to get flights from Rome to Vienna via Germany. There were no problems leaving Rome, but when we tried to board our second flight from Germany to Vienna, the airline staff were reluctant to let us on the plane as we didn't have Austrian passports. We had to show proof of residence in Austria before we were allowed on board, not something you normally think of having to do when travelling within Europe's Schengen zone. And not everyone was so lucky.
We've just boarded this flight from Düsseldorf to Vienna. It's empty. There was a family from Slovakia in the waiting area with us. They were denied entry, it seems, because they didn't have Austrian passports or they couldn't prove that they lived in Austria. They said that they were going on to Bratislava, which is just over the border. We were waiting to see if they would eventually be allowed onto the plane, but there's just been announcements saying that boarding is completed, so it seems as though they're not being allowed to fly and are having to remain in transit here in Düsseldorf.
We arrived back to a very different Austria, a country where gatherings of more than five people are banned. Schools and shops selling non-essential goods are closed. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz has appealed for patience.
Meine große Bitte an Sie, tragen Sie die Maßnahmen weiter so konsequent mit.
I appeal to you to continue following these measures as strictly as you have done so far. And please also remember, during stressful situations, such as shopping at the supermarket or at the pharmacy, that we in Austria are a team, and that this Team Austria should stand together in circumstances such as these.
Zusammenstehen und zusammenhalten sollten.
We're now in quarantine for 2 weeks after having been in Italy. In Vienna, you hear very little traffic noise, but from time to time through the open windows, there are church bells and people playing music from the neighbouring houses.
Bethany Bell in quarantine in Austria. Iranian officials fighting to contain the coronavirus outbreak appeal to people not to travel on the eve of the Persian New Year holiday. Many people are reported to have ignored those warnings, though. There has been heavy traffic on roads leading to the Caspian Sea coast, a popular holiday destination. At least 1 million people are said to have made journeys. The health ministry in Tehran says the virus is now killing one person every 10 minutes. Iran has over 18,000 confirmed cases and almost 1,300 deaths. But are those figures reliable? Here's Rana Rahimpour from BBC Persian.
We can't be certain because Iran is a very vast country and with more than 80 million people. And reports from many cities and smaller towns say that they don't have test kits and they're unable to test all the people who are passing away. But interestingly, Kianusha Jahanpour, one of the spokespeople for the health ministry, said that every hour, 50 Iranians are being infected by the coronavirus and every 10 minutes, one person is dying. This is already a very high number. And if we believe these numbers are true, it seems that the measures that the Iranian authorities have introduced are not enough. Despite the advice from the Iranian authorities, so many people, at least 1 million people have traveled internally. And this creates a lot of anger among those who have gone into self-isolation. And they say that you're traveling and you might possibly take the virus to other cities. But unfortunately, it seems that either the Iranian authorities don't have the infrastructure and enough forces to enforce this and stop these movements, or they don't believe in it. But today, five former health ministers wrote a letter to the president and asked for stricter measures to contain the virus.
Rana Rahimpour from BBC Persian. Now, there's relief in China as it recorded no new domestic cases of coronavirus for the first time. Some of the restrictions in the city of Wuhan, where the pandemic began, are being lifted. And there's optimism in the capital, Beijing.
I think the news will increase confidence amongst the public. It's especially important for the expected coming goal of everything returning back to normal.
The situation is going in the right direction. However, people can't forget to be cautious, because now there are many people coming back from abroad. We must pay a lot of attention to this.
A government investigation has also ruled that police in Wuhan acted inappropriately by punishing a doctor who blew the whistle on the outbreak. Li Wenliang, who died from the virus in February, was one of a group of doctors trying to warn the public on social media about a SARS-like virus spreading in the city last year. Now, as conditions in China have improved, foreign workers and students have been heading back, and the authorities are now fearful of reinfection by those coming from other countries. This international student, Sarah, who recently travelled back to China from London, described her journey and the strict quarantine measures.
Yeah, they took our temperature before we board and also twice during the flight. We had to wear masks and goggles and throughout the whole journey. And when we landed, we went through a series of health check. I am now in the quarantine place and I need to stay here for 14 days before I can go back to my family.
Do you feel safer in China or in the UK?
I feel safer back home, actually, because they come to us and check our temperature every day. Even after I go home, they still like check up on us.
That's Sarah, who's an international student just back in China. The Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has announced a one-day curfew this coming Sunday to take place across the country as a drill for further action against the spread of coronavirus. There are concerns that India, currently with a relatively low number of recorded cases, could become a global hotspot. This warning comes from one of the country's leading health experts, Dr. Ramanan Laxanarayan from the Centre for Disease Dynamics and Economic Policy. He's been speaking to our South Asia correspondent, Rajini Vaidyanathan.
So I think India is as affected as anyone else. It's not an exceptional country in any way. We don't have any immunity to the virus. And we just haven't tested enough people to know what the real caseload is. So if you're seeing a low number of cases, keep in mind that's the number of confirmed cases through testing. And testing has not been made available widely.
How concerned should people be here?
India is not exceptional with respect to susceptibility to the coronavirus. We have no immunity to this virus, just like the rest of the world. And there's no indication to suggest that our caseload will be any different than the rest of the world. So we're probably a couple of weeks behind some other countries in terms of where the epidemic is. But we are likely to see the same tsunami of cases that Italy or Spain witnessed recently or was earlier seen in China here as well in a few weeks.
You say a tsunami of cases. I mean, what could be the picture in India in a couple of months from now?
So our best estimates, which come from mathematical models, are that in the US or in the UK, somewhere between 20 and 60% of people will be infected. And if you apply even the lowest end of this to India and say 20% of Indians will be affected, that's about 300 million cases. And roughly about 1 in 5 to 1 in 10 are severe cases. So you'd end up with a number of about 4 to 8 million severe cases which require hospitalization in India.
Are there any factors that are unique to India or South Asia that make coping with this virus different, challenging?
So there are three things which make viruses sort of spread and have an impact. One is how fast they spread. This virus spreads very quickly. The second is how much it kills. It kills about 20 times as much as the seasonal influenza. The third is really the capacity of the health system to deal with it. If you don't have a health system that's equipped to deal with it, and if you don't have the capability to have ventilators and so forth at scale, then you increase the adverse consequence. We don't have the NHS. We don't have a hospital system that's nearly equipped. India has only about 70 to 100,000 ICU beds in the entire country, amongst the lowest rates for a country of this size. We've got a three-week window. So imagine that you're standing on the shore and you're watching the tsunami come in. If you're just going to stand there and watch the tsunami, you're finished. If you can run as fast as you can, you have a better chance. And I think that without panicking people, I think it's time to batten down the hatches and try to ride out the storm.
Dr. Ramanan Lakshminarayanan from the Centre for Disease Dynamics and Economic Policy. Now, here's my colleague Jackie Leonard.
All around the world, there are people in isolation in an attempt to limit the spread of the coronavirus. On the face of it, it sounds easy enough, but, well, isolating. You are not, however, alone. You have us and the other Global News podcast listeners. If you are in isolation, send us an audio postcard. Record yourself, tell us who and where you are, and share your one top tip for keeping your spirits up. Then email it to globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. We'll keep each other company. Thank you.
Thanks, Jackie. In the United States, clinical drug trials are underway in the hope of combating the coronavirus. At the White House, President Trump said he believes the drug tests could be a game changer.
Clinical trials are already underway for many new therapies, and we're working on scaling these to allow many more Americans to access different drugs that have shown really good promise. We've had some really good promise. You have remdesivir, and you have chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. So those are two that are out now. Essentially approved for prescribed use. And I think it's going to be very exciting. I think it could be a game changer, and maybe not.
Dr. Kritika Kapali is vice chair of the Infectious Diseases Society of America's Global Health Committee.
Remdesivir, which is one of the drugs that's being trialed, has been shown to have broad antiviral activity against numerous viruses. The other drugs that President Trump were talking about, hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, are drugs that we have used to treat malaria in the past. There was a very small trial that came out of France that showed that patients who received hydroxychloroquine cleared their viral load by 6 days. If they received hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin, they had a greater chance of clearing their viral load by 6 days compared to people who did not receive anything. I need to caution, though, that this is a very small study, and this is why we need to do a larger clinical trial or study to find out more information. So remdesivir is able to get through a clinical trial and also able to be obtained for what we call compassionate use. And then hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine are already FDA approved drugs that we use for malaria. So they are available. I would caution people, though, not to go out and just start taking these medicines, as they do have adverse events that need to be monitored by a physician who's knowledgeable of them.
And that was Dr. Kritika Kapali. Chile's Congress has decided to postpone for 6 months a referendum on whether to rewrite the constitution. The move was announced as the number of coronavirus cases there continues to rise. Here's Leonardo Rocha.
The public vote was going to take place on April the 26th. It has now been delayed until the last Sunday of October. The decision was taken by consensus in Congress after President Sebastián Piñera declared a state of emergency, giving the authorities powers to restrict freedom of movement and protect supply chains across Chile. The referendum is one of the main demands made during 5 months of protests calling for greater equality. Demonstrators say the country must replace the current constitution, which was drawn up by the military dictatorship led by General Pinochet.
Meanwhile, the Brazilian government has announced the closure of all land borders for the next 15 days. The only exception is the busy frontier between Brazil and Uruguay, which will remain open. More than 500 people have tested positive for the virus so far in Brazil. 7 people have died. Other countries in Latin America have taken drastic measures to try to slow the spread of coronavirus. In Colombia, all international flights into the country will be banned from Monday. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has said he believes the UK can turn the tide against the coronavirus outbreak in the next 12 weeks. Speaking in Downing Street, Mr. Johnson struck an optimistic tone, saying he was absolutely confident the virus could be sent packing if people adhered to restrictions on social mixing. He also had this message for business: stand by your employees and we'll stand by you. Here's our political correspondent, Norman Smith.
Despite the rising death toll, the Prime Minister sought to reassure people that it would be possible to overcome the worst of coronavirus within the next 12 weeks. His upbeat comments follow a series of dramatic restrictions and precautions introduced by the government over the past few days, including school closures. Mr. Johnson pointed to a dramatic expansion in the level of testing and repeatedly thanked people for observing the guidelines on so-called social distancing. He also dismissed suggestions of a possible series of dramatic restrictions in London, saying there would be no moves to close the transport system. He cautioned, however, that success in tackling the disease would depend on people continuing to observe the necessary precautions, but he made this prediction.
I'm conscious, as the days have gone by, that people will want to know how long we are expecting them to keep it up. And I wanted to try to say something today about how I see the timescale of this campaign and where we're going and what we need to do. And I do think, looking at it all, that we can turn the tide within the next 12 weeks, and I'm absolutely confident that we can send a coronavirus packing.
Mr. Johnson also appealed to businesses, in his words, to stand by their employees. The government is still to bring forward a promised package of measures to safeguard wages, a delay which has prompted mounting unease at Westminster amid fears many more companies will soon have no alternative but to lay off staff. In the Commons, MPs, including a string of senior Tories, demanded urgent action. Among them, the former Business Secretary Greg Clark.
On Tuesday, the Chancellor promised that there would be employment support. But as each day goes by, businesses are making decisions that will be irreversible. If the government does not act immediately, large numbers of people will be unemployed. Registering them will put huge pressure on the welfare system. Vital skills will be lost and good businesses will cease trading.
And earlier, the former Labour Prime Minister Gordon Brown warned that unless the government demonstrated overwhelming resolve and brought forward measures to protect people's pay, there would be widespread job losses.
If we have one wave of redundancies in tourism, airport, travel, restaurants, hotels, it will inevitably lead to a second wave of big redundancies where small businesses are affected, people can't afford to buy things. And I think this is the week where the government has to act to deal with employment protection. My fear is that we have not done enough to do that, while other countries, you go right through Europe, other countries have been making provision for this, we have yet to do so.
Boris Johnson's optimism is in stark contrast to the darkening mood at Westminster, where many MPs are much more cautious about overcoming the disease and the resilience of the public.
Norman Smith reporting. Queen Elizabeth has issued a message of solidarity, making her first public statement on the crisis. She said British history had been forged by people and communities coming together to work as one. The Queen left Buckingham Palace in London for her home in Windsor on Thursday, as our royal correspondent Johnny Diamond reports.
The Queen is in Windsor. Her thoughts are with the nation as it enters, in her words, a period of great concern and uncertainty. She writes of the change to routines and patterns of life. She highlights the need to protect the most vulnerable in our communities. Our nation's history, she says, has been forged by people and communities coming together as one, concentrating on a common goal. She gives thanks to scientists, doctors, nurses, emergency and public services, but she says it is individuals who, more than at any time in our recent past, will have a vitally important part to play. I am certain, she says, we are up to the challenge. You can be assured, she concludes, my family and I stand ready to do our part.
Our royal correspondent, Johnny Diamond. As COVID-19 continues to wreak havoc on the world economy, some industries are better suited than others to deal with the disruption. In South Africa, pharmacies and cleaning companies are capitalising on an urgent need for hand sanitizer and disinfection services, as Vumani Mkhize found out.
With their faces covered in masks and hands wearing thick waterproof gloves, a team of cleaners are hard at work scrubbing away germs. As cases of the deadly coronavirus continue to rise in South Africa, companies are taking extraordinary measures to sanitize their communal workspaces.
This Johannesburg office is getting a disinfectant scrub, and you can actually smell the alcohol from the cleaning solution. Since the outbreak of the coronavirus began, companies and ordinary South Africans have been clamoring for deep cleaning services, and they are determined to keep their homes and their offices virus-free.
While most industries around the world are finding it hard to cope, cleaning companies are seemingly virus-proof.
There's a lot of people calling and wanting stuff done and wanting us to come and clean, so it's just us getting there and getting to get to all the people, that's the problem. But we make it work, we go to all the clients, we see all the clients, we help them where we can.
Eric Marais runs Sons of Hygiene, a company that specializes in deep cleaning residential and commercial properties.
So for a business, we'll go into the business and we'll do all the areas that you, the high traffic areas, as your doorways, walkways, door handles, light switches, we'll take that, we'll sanitize all the areas. So if you touch it, it is sanitized. And we also install sanitizer dispensers at all the doorways. So as you go into the door, you can sanitize your hands as you go in.
Pharmacies are also seeing increased traffic volumes inside their stores, and most customers are looking for one product, hand sanitizer.
I'm looking for hand sanitizer.
How many are you looking for?
Lizette Kruger from Dis-Chem Pharmacies says demand is so high, they've sold 6 months' worth of stock in just a matter of days, creating a nationwide shortage.
And unfortunately, we so try to say to them, take one and leave one for your fellow neighbour. But unfortunately, they clear the shelves. Whenever we put our hand sanitizer, they clear the shelf. But what Dis-Chem is trying to do, so all the South Africans can get a hand sanitizer, we actually put the stock at the self-medication counter, so they have to ask for it.
Talk us through what other products that South Africans can use, okay, if they wanted to protect themselves.
Okay, obviously, these are all the washes. The moment when it says a nice antibacterial wash, definitely. And then your normal bar soap.
Yeah. So, I mean, so this is your first line of defense, right? Just using soap?
Yes, like absolutely. Normal soap. Every time, I mean, before you eat, after you eat, after you go to the bathroom, when you're in contact with people, we try to educate all our employees so they can educate our customers to say, contact, no contact, arms way, you know, fist bump rather than shaking hands, yes. No hugs and kisses, yes. You know.
Yeah.
And then, yes, normal bath soap. So anybody can actually follow that routine.
While the times may be good for some industries, the overall picture for the economy is bleak. Since the virus outbreak began, South Africa's currency, the rand, has weakened by over 20% to the US dollar, and many industries are finding it difficult to operate in this tough economic environment. As a measure of relief, government is planning on using the $10 billion unemployment insurance fund to assist temporary layoffs and assist companies hit hard by the pandemic. Cleaning up the socio-economic mess left behind by COVID-19 will take years. For now, South Africa, like many countries around the world, is trying to curb a potential public health crisis while still ensuring the economy doesn't grind to a halt.
For Marnie McKeezy in South Africa. As millions of people around the world self-isolate at home, the US media company Netflix is reducing its bitrate so that increased streaming doesn't overwhelm the internet. Different restrictions continue country by country. The Church of England says only 5 people are now allowed to attend weddings. And there are any number of other restrictions being imposed across Europe because of the pandemic, with exceptions for necessities. But what constitutes a necessity is shaped very much by national culture, as our Europe regional editor Mike Sanders has been finding out.
Coronavirus has shrunk daily life to fit the 4 walls of home. Europeans are looking for every scrap of comfort to make their confinement bearable. Or in Britain's case, every scrap of toilet paper, with panic buying even before a lockdown is enforced. In France, it's the wine that many people are looking to. Not strictly a foodstuff, but close enough for the wine shops or caves, as the BBC's Marianne Besnay in Paris explained.
The situation was a bit unclear of what is first necessity, because some caves were saying, well, this is very important. It's something also to help people go through this. And I must say that in our local supermarket, yesterday, the wine and beer section was quite empty. It was not the toilet paper.
Across the border in Belgium, it's the chips, French fries, frites, fritures, call them what you like, that are indispensable, as Johan de Conk, a lawyer and musician from the coastal town of Blankenberge, insisted.
As we can't have the pubs open and we have to do it without the alcohol, I guess they didn't want to do the same with the frites.
There is, of course, a serious reason.
The thing is really like they close down all restaurants, but they keep open food shops. And I think the reason why they kept open the frites shops or the frites shops, I don't know how you say it, is because people can wait outside, so they don't have to be in a small space with a lot of people, so they can keep the social distance and still get the food.
A little further north in the Netherlands, the restrictions are slightly more relaxed, extending to the coffee shops that sell cannabis. They're allowed to operate a takeaway service. Several Dutch mayors have said that's preferable to letting street dealers fill the market vacuum. And again, the queues are outside, not a crush inside.
Mike Sanders reporting. And that's all from us for now. There will be an updated version of Global News to download later. And if you'd like to comment on this edition and what we talked about, you can drop us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. My name's Andrew Peach. Till next time, goodbye.
Brought to you by Capital One, where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn 5 times the national average. Just imagine, 5 times more savings toward that overdue home addition, maybe even an addition on that addition. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member FDIC.